This week's episode of PFW Chicago Football Podcast is brought to you by FanEssentials.net. How would you like to get all of your favorite NFL teams' merchandise delivered straight to your doorstep? This is a perfect holiday gift with the holidays just around the corner. What FanEssentials.net does is they find the sports gear so you don't have to, and each fan box comes packed full with some amazing gear. Prices start at $34.99. And if you go to FanEssentials.net and use our promo code Chicago at checkout, that is Chicago, the beautiful city of Chicago, you get 30% off your first month. Go to FanEssentials.net. It's a great gift idea for any of you sports fans out there. Hey, the Bears won a game. Let's talk some Bears. Welcome to PFW Chicago Football Podcast, coming at you December 7th here into the month of December, and the Bears have a win in the month of December, one more than they had in the entire month of November. I am your host, Kevin Fishbane. You can follow me on Twitter, at KFishbane, joined by both my producers today, John Solly and Dan Mott. And you can go check out all of our work, of course, at profootballweekly.com/Bears, on Twitter at Bears_Insider. And go ahead and add us on Snapchat, Bears_Insider. Had some good Snapchats of all the snow and fun from Soldier Field on Sunday, where the Bears beat the 49ers 26-6. Early on, it wasn't looking very good for the Bears. They couldn't complete a pass. They weren't running the ball well. They had some pretty terrible special teams mistakes. But then we saw why the 49ers have only one win. Matt Barkley turned it out at the end of the half. A great drive coming out of halftime. Jordan Howard, 32 carries, over 100 yards again. And the defense stepped up. Akeem Hicks was named today Defensive Player of the Week. He had two sacks. Leonard Floyd with a safety, his first game back from a concussion. So good things from the Bears. And there's a good column by Hub Arkish on our website, kind of telling Bears fans, hey, it's okay to enjoy this. No, you're not going to get the number two pick, but your young players, your Jordan Howard, Leonard Floyd, Nick Kwiatkowski, Cody Whitehair, these guys played well. And John, we talked about this before. I understand why fans want tanking. I get it. But when you look at this draft, you look at the teams ahead of the Bears, you knew they were going to get another win or two during the season. And this is about building for the future. And I think you have to be, A, excited about the way these young guys played, even if it was against the 49ers. And B, you got to be happy the Bears didn't look like the 49ers. They looked like they pretty much quit in the snow in the second half.
Yeah, what a surprise when Dow Loggins gives the ball to Jordan Howard 30-plus times, the Bears get a win against maybe a team that can't stop the run.
Maybe he's been listening to the podcast or watching Hub complain about it on the TV show every Saturday.
Every single Saturday. This is a good win for the Bears. And I've always said, if you're not, competing for a championship, then try and get the highest draft pick you can. That doesn't mean, you're going out and asking professional players to intentionally lose a game. That's not what I mean by tanking, but, with all the injuries and the suspensions and everything that's going on with the Bears, I thought that maybe they would lose this one. You're not tanking purposely, but you're tanking by putting out a roster that can't really compete. But we saw on Sunday just how bad the 49ers are, and the Bears came out with a great game plan on offense and defense, and you can see that there's talent there. I have thought that Ryan Pace has drafted well in his first 2 years. I know it's tough to evaluate a class this early, but I'm pretty happy with the direction of the draft under Ryan Pace. And so I don't think you need to be in the top two to have a successful draft with this administration. I think when you're in the top 10, I think that the Bears will find a good player, and hopefully they have some luck. You look at Kevin White, that's bad luck with some broken bones. But I'm okay with a Bears victory. It's fine. They look good. They like you said, they're young guys that developed, took advantage of a game to develop, which is all I'm asking for from young guys.
Yeah, and that's, you're looking for reasons to watch this team in the future, looking for reasons to have some kind of positive feelings going into 2017. And, as you said, Ryan Pace, I think, as we look back on the season, is going to come out looking okay because of the way Howard has played and Cody Whitehair and Leonard Floyd. And then you look at John Fox and you say, okay, 17 players on IR. According to Spotrac, the Bears have $31.6 million of cap on injured reserve. That is the most in the league. And they have $22.6 million of cash. That is the third most in the league. So, it's, again, you look at Cutler and Miller and Long out, you know, that are on IR, and Jarrell Freeman is suspended, Alshon Jeffrey suspended, Lamar Houston on IR, Kyle Fuller hasn't played yet this season. So you can see Dave Trevathan on IR. You go on and on with the injuries, and that brings me to this report, John, that came out from Mike Mulligan of the Chicago Tribune. Most of you know him as Mully on 670 to Score. Essentially, that there are rumors in the coaching circles that Vic Fangio's job may be in jeopardy, that it's possible. I mean, we expect some changes at the end of the year, but it'd be Vic, of all people, where there might be a differing sense of philosophy between him and John Fox, and that Vic might go elsewhere, which is crazy on the surface because the defense has been good. Vic Fangio is considered one of the best coordinators in football. It's the offense that's been giving them issues. But, you know, if you're John Fox, you're the head coach, your team has been this bad for 2 years, you know, and you think that you, if you had a different defensive coordinator or whatnot, I guess you have to make these moves. And I think also, even if this is not true, this is an example of these things start to happen. People start to watch their back when your team is 3-9.
Kevin, you're at Hallis. You're around the team. You're around these guys. How would you describe the relationship between Fox and Fangio as compared to the relationship between Fox and other assistant coaches or the offensive coordinator, Dowell Loggins?
Yeah, I wouldn't. I mean, when I started to think about it this morning when I saw the report, you know, it's not like John Fox talks about Vic Fangio very much. He talks about Dowell only because he has to defend Dowell sometimes from our questions about the offense. You know, we don't really have a good gauge, I guess, on where John Fox and Vic Fangio are. I guess pressed on it, I could see that, you know, it does kind of look like Vic's calling the plays and John Fox is a defensive guy. And, you know, John Fox has been a 4-3 guy. They have a 3-4. Now, if you move on from Fangio, you can't really switch to a 4-3 because of the guys you have. It's an interesting thing. And look, January 2nd, when this season, you know, after the season ends, these things are going to start. There's going to be some dominoes. Not everyone on this staff is going to come back. That would be unheard of for a team that goes three or that is this bad for the second year in a row. It would just be quite mind-boggling. And I'm being selfish here too, John, because Vic Fangio is one of my favorite people to interview at Hallis Hall. So I don't want to lose that privilege. But it is certainly a thing that I think all of us are going to be going to be very sensitive to in the next few weeks to see how the defense looks.
So let me ask you this then. If you're Ryan Pace and you're hearing that, hey, Vic Fangio may be looking to move on, do you take a step back and say, okay, I've got John Fox as my head coach. Vic Fangio has been outstanding as a defensive coordinator. He has made it very well known he wants to be a head coach at some point. Do you take a step back and say, well, do I have the right guy at the top?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, the Bears have said all along that Ryan Pace is in charge of football operations, and that would include head coach, you would think. But I've said this several times, that John Fox's job, in my mind, is not in jeopardy. Now, maybe Pace steps in after he sees this and says, look, you got to keep Vic. Vic can't go anywhere if you know, for this to work for next year. But that will be an interesting thing to look at, because I think people kept kind of wondered where Fox and Pace, you know, do they see eye to eye on everything? It's going to be an interesting few weeks, that's for sure. And that's a report that today, we're recording this Wednesday morning. We'll hear from Vic Fangio this afternoon and John Fox. I imagine they will not address it. You know, John Fox will give his classic, it's just a report. You know, there's lots of reports. But just something to monitor as we hit these final four games. And these final four games, the Bears, right now, all four teams left on the Bears schedule are teams that are fighting for NFC playoff spots. It starts with the Detroit Lions on Sunday in Detroit. The Lions right now, 8-4, first place in the division, a far cry from week four, when they came to Chicago and the Bears won and Matthew Stafford looked terrible. And you look back now, that was his worst game in a year and a half. And now the Bears are in complete spoiler role. And they've played some close games up in Ford Field. I've actually never covered a Bears win in Ford Field. They've lost the last three up there. To break it all down, welcomed in now a friend of the program, Justin Rogers, covers the Lions for the Detroit News, to go behind enemy lines and take a look at Detroit's ball club. So, Justin, last time you were on the show, we previewed Bears-Lions Week 4. Before we kind of touch on that game, I want to talk about Matthew Stafford more, kind of in general, the way he's played this year. How do you balance the praise for what Matthew has done himself and then, of course, what Jim Bob Cooter's offense has allowed him to do?
No, I think it's a symbiotic pairing. I really do. You know, that was a system and a scheme that was brought in to really maximize Stafford's strengths and take away some of his weaknesses or minimize those. So it's a safe offense. You know, it's a lot of short passes, crisp passes that are high efficiency, low interception risks. And then it puts the ball in the hands of the weapons. You know, guys like Theo Riddick, Golden Tate, Marvin Jones, Eric Ebron, all guys that are good after the catch. And in Tate and Riddick's case, you know, exceptional after the catch. Two of the better athletes with the ball in their hands in the open field in the entire NFL. So you look at the distance that Stafford's passes are traveling, and I'm sure it's even dropped lower with this little tap pass they've been doing to Tate in motion. And, you know, the numbers aren't very impressive. He's not throwing downfield a whole lot. But when they do, they're calculated risks. Usually those opportunities are open through play action or some kind of shoulder fake. And it's just a good fit all the way around. And you see the numbers reflect that. 20 touchdowns. To five interceptions, and then a completion percentage that's hovering just south of 70%.
And I remember that game back in week four, thinking, and you know this too, that Stafford's had some duds at Soldier Field. You know, I don't know what it is about Chicago or anything, but every once in a while he's gone in there and had a dud, and he had that in week four. It was his worst game in, you know, a year and a half, really. Now, when you look back at that game, do you kind of, and seeing where he's come since then, how much of that game is a fluke, or maybe there's some things that Vic Fangio's defense showed that, you know, that the Bears could probably try to do again, maybe still have a little bit of success on Sunday?
You know, the offense was just in a weird spot at that point in the season. They quite hadn't gelled. You know, the big play in that game was when Tate ran the wrong route on a sight adjustment and, you know, resulted in an interception, second interception. I think I'm thinking of the right one where Eric Ebron was stripped.
Yeah.
Coming across the middle. So those are two interceptions that I don't know if you could really put on the quarterback. You know, a receiver running the wrong route, and I don't know, maybe you blame the quarterback for the Ebron interception since he put it in such a tight window, but you expect your player to hold on to that ball. So, you know, I think the bigger problem was they couldn't move the ball effectively well enough during the course of that game. They didn't have, you know, much of a ground game, and they really still don't. But, You know, the offense is in a better place. Golden Tate, especially, is in a better place. He was really struggling physically and mentally. Kind of goes hand in hand with him when he's down mentally. He just gets himself down into a slump. But he's performing a lot better. You know, Marvin Jones is out of the lineup, but Anquan Boldin, Andre Roberts, even T.J. Jones have kind of stepped up. And you know, Stafford's just got so many weapons. I think, you know, they're still trying to figure it out to, you know, perfection, but they're coming off the best game of their season. Didn't do a whole lot in the red zone against the Saints, but put together so many consecutive long drives in that game that you know, I think they're going to be really confident coming into this one. I think there's something about to be said about playing outdoors. You know, it shouldn't affect him as much as it does, but you know, certain quarterbacks, Drew Brees among them, just get more comfortable playing in the confines of the dome where they have no elements to deal with. It was a pretty nice day in Chicago, but still, I mean, it was a little crisp, you know, a little bit of wind. At the end of the day, it's still outdoors. It's a different football. It's different turf. And, you know, that affects an offense that's used to playing inside.
When you look at that run game, the fact that the Lions are using so many of these short passes, do they kind of legitimize that as why it's okay that the run numbers are down? Are they able to kind of make up for a run game that's not going to scare anybody because of those short passes? Or is it a legitimate issue that a Bears team could try to take advantage of?
No, I mean, the short passing game does compensate for it to some degree, but, you know, they still expect efficiency out of their ground game. You know, they're more runs stopped for no gain or loss than anyone in the NFL. And that puts you in bad situations when you do run the ball, and it gives you less confidence when you try to run the ball, when you know you're going to be facing second and longs and third and longs because you just ran a play that was essentially the equivalent of a drop pass. And the Lions also are towards the top of the NFL in that, too. So, Theo Riddick's really improved as a running back this year, but he still hasn't been able to shake a high ankle sprain that he suffered earlier in the year. It's limited him a lot. Dwayne Washington, the rookie, has kind of been carrying the load the last 2 weeks, but he went down with an ankle injury his second of the season against the Saints. So now it's down to Zach Zenner and apparently Drake Bell, who re-signed with the Lions today. I don't know if he's going to play. I don't know how much he's going to carry. I think he just might be an insurance policy at this point. But, you know, half-strength Theo Riddick, at least as a running back, and Zach Zenner isn't something that's going to strike the fear, you know, into a whole lot of teams.
The offensive line, are some of the, you know, quote-unquote leaks there? Where's the concern level? You know, the Bears are coming off their best pass rush game in a couple seasons with six sacks, granted against Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers, but, you know, that's where the Bears have their horses on the, is at the edge. You know, where, well, how do you kind of envision that matchup for Sunday?
Yeah, the Lions are better up front than they were when they played the Bears the last time. They benched Laken Tomlinson, their 2015 first-round pick, in favor of third-rounder this year, Graham Glasgow. And listen, Glasgow plays a lot like a third-rounder. There's still some inconsistencies there, but it's better than the way Tomlinson was performing. Taylor Decker has only continued to get better. He's done a really nice job at the blind side all season long. I think he's exceeded expectations, maybe even wildly exceeded them, both as a run blocker and a pass protector. The right side is what it is. You know, Riley Reiff and Larry Warford are pretty darn good. I saw one analyst out there put Riley Reiff on his first half of the season all-pro team. I thought that maybe was a little generous. He gives up a little bit too much pass rush pressure for my taste. But, it's as a group, they're definitely better than last year. They're definitely trending in the right direction. They've got some young pieces in there in Decker and Glasgow that just continue to get better and better by the week.
Yeah, Tomlinson for Glasgow. That's a Chicago native for a just outside Chicago native. So Chicago fans like for both those guys to be in the lineup, you know, to make it work for our Chicago products.
Yeah, I mean, Tomlinson's such a nice guy, and I think anybody that's ever covered him in the Chicago area knows that.
Yep.
You feel bad for his struggles, but he just hasn't been able to get it together. You really thought maybe you'd get the second-year leap that you get from offensive linemen when they can focus on NFL preparation versus draft preparation. It's just a different set of workouts and mindset. But he really bombed all through training camp, struggled through those first four games, and got the plug pulled early.
Talking Bears Alliance here with Justin Rogers. Justin, by the way, I forgot to say this at the top, you're officially a friend of the program now. It's your second time on the show, so congratulations. Send you a t-shirt in the mail.
I'm looking forward to that. Make it a medium.
There you go. You're now tied with former Lions beat writer Josh Katzenstein. So, we'll see where we can take it from there. Let's talk Lions defense versus Bears offense. I find it fascinating the Lions' numbers against the pass, because if you just look at them, just looking at the numbers, they're kind of terrible. And then you see they had that great game against Drew Brees. You look at the points allowed over the last five or six games. You look at the red zone numbers over the last six games. So what's kind of come together for them, and how do you, when you analyze this team, kind of take one with the other? The pass numbers haven't gotten that much better, but obviously the results in the field are doing pretty well.
Yeah, you know, the number one thing for the Lions' defense in terms of pass defense is they don't want to allow the big play. They're just, it's like they're allergic to it, and they go above and beyond to not get beaten over the top. And so with that comes the conceding of short passes. That's okay. You can get away with that as long as you tackle well. And early in the season, you know, the zone coverage led to a lot of breakdowns, a lot of yards after the catch. Their tackling was pretty spotty. Early in the season, they've cleaned up so many of those issues. So now when you go to a guy like Drew Brees or Sam Bradford, and you're seeing these completion percentages of 71% or 75% or 76%, the numbers are you know, inflated by the Lions conceding these short passes, but they're making the tackles. As you mentioned, they're keeping teams out of the red zone. And I think a large part of it is also the team's gotten healthy. You know, early in the season, they lost Lodi Nada for multiple games. They lost Ziggy Ansah for multiple games. Darius Slay was out for a stretch of multiple games. You know, DeAndre Levy's still not in the lineup, but that was a guy they expected to have from the season start, played one game and hasn't played since. And so you're talking about a patchwork defense early in the season that, you know, had to grow and develop chemistry of the backups, and now that they have those starters back and those backups are coming in with some experience, it's just a more prepared unit. Almost saw an identical thing last year with Terrell Austin's group, where they were probably, you know, at least a bottom five defense through the first half of the season as they got used to not having Levy, not having Sue unfairly, and they adjusted, and they came together, and they played well. So having those guys back, tackling better, is making the big, you know, biggest difference. I still can't get over how well they played in New Orleans. Nobody saw that coming. You know, it was a remarkable performance. They caught a couple breaks, but, you know, that happens in games like that. And the other thing that's really working for them is they've been really leaning heavy on the big nickel package. I know that's been a trend in the NFL for a couple of years. And the Lions are really leaning on it heavy right now, and they're going to have to lean on it more because they just lost cornerback Quandre Diggs for the season. But they've been playing a lot of three safeties, and when you do that, especially with guys that can cover, you're not losing too much in run support in terms of weight and tackling ability, and you got guys with a little bit more range and coverage, and this is a passing league. So once that chemistry gets there, particularly in the zone coverages, that can work really well in your favor.
Now, the Bears, even though at times this year they've tried not to, they will hopefully just, they want to just run the ball. And Jordan Howard, who had his kind of debut and coming out part against Detroit in Week 4, he's got 500-yard games this season. That's what they want to do. Sometimes Dow Loggins can't help himself, but they're going to try to run it, obviously, against Detroit. You mentioned some of the tackling when it comes to the pass defense. How is that factoring in terms of that front seven, and what do you see in terms of how the Lions are able to defend Jordan Howard?
We'd have to check the record, but I'm pretty sure I confessed my love for Jordan Howard the last time we spoke.
I believe you did. Yeah,
really, really big fan of his coming out of college, and I would even say I've been surprised with the amount of success he's had. Maybe I didn't know he would have this level of opportunity, but he's been awesome. I got to see the highlights of the game last week. He's just one of the best young backs in the NFL. It's pretty cool to see that success. You know, Lions have had some struggles with power backs. And so their big thing is you know, trying to, they just want to keep a team under 100 yards. They don't care how they do it. You know, if they get up big and take away the run game that way, they just want to make a team one-dimensional. I think that's the way they're going to have to beat the Bears. The only way they can beat the Bears is if they take away Howard. Because you take away Howard, you force them to pass. You force them to pass without Alshon Jeffrey, without their top two quarterbacks, and that's just not going to be a good look. I mean, I think that's pretty safe to say that. So, you know, I mentioned the three safety look earlier. You know, they might go away from that. They're holding out a little hope this week that DeAndre Levy will be back. I'm not crossing my fingers at this point. You know, I think I've gotten a little tired of the storyline, like many of the fans have. But if Levy comes back, that'll let them do some more three linebacker work, stack the box a little bit more. And even if they don't, safety Tavon Wilson and the rookie Miles Killebrew are pretty big-bodied, hard-hitting guys that fill those run lanes nicely. So I imagine they'll be able to keep it in check. But, again, you just never know. If you're going to keep feeding that guy the ball, all it takes is one hole to open up and he can bust one for 50.
Yeah, well, the Bears have done a really nice job of getting that going earlier, and then some point when no one expects it, they'll throw it, and then the game will be over. So we'll see if they actually maintain that. You can follow Justin Rogers on Twitter at Justin_Rogers for Lions Bears stuff this week as we get ready for Sunday's game, a noon kickoff on CBS. Justin, before we wrap things up, with the Lions playing as well as they have, and in first place the NFC North, looking for that first division title in, what, 23 years, how many more times have you been able to see Jim Caldwell smile compared to your previous couple seasons covering him?
You know, it's not as up as you would think it would be. You know, Caldwell does, when he's angry, he does his best to dismiss it, and when he's happy, he does his best to dismiss it. He tries to keep this motif of always being the same all the time. But you have seen more energy and emotion seems like there have been more emotional outbursts just because of the craziness of all the late-game comebacks this season.
Yeah, and I was thinking that to wrap things up here, Lions are 8-point favorites. And for a team that's played a lot of close games, it's a pretty big number, as bad as the Bears are. And I've now covered 3 Bears-Lions games at Ford Field, and all 3 have been really weird, high-scoring, back and forth. I think there's 2 overtime games mixed in there. Last year, looked like the Lions had won. The Bears moved downfield in like 7 seconds to bring it to overtime, and then the Lions won in overtime. So without putting you on the spot for at least a score or anything, you think that Lions can cover that 8-point spread?
I wish there was some way to check this quickly. Last I looked, the Lions opened up as the biggest favorite in the NFL this week, and I wonder when the last time the Lions were the biggest favorite in a week. It just it has to be since like early 90s when they were a pretty high octane offense with Herman Moore and Barry Sanders and all those guys. But this game, I'm getting this vibe of a couple years ago, 2011, I believe, when the Lions made their first playoff appearance in a while, and they came home and they needed to beat the Chargers to get in. It was like Christmas Eve. They hadn't been in a while, and the Chargers were a decent team, and the Lions just came out and rocked them. I mean, they went deep to Calvin Johnson on the first play, and it was basically a party at Ford Field from start to finish. And given the way this team's playing, the confidence it's playing with, I don't know. I know the Bears are a division opponent, and those games are always close regardless of the circumstance, but just the momentum this team has right now with winning 7 of 8 and 4 in a row and really just dominating a New Orleans team, I get the feeling this is going to be one of those games where they just come out and just punch the Bears in the mouth early, and that team doesn't recover. It just has that feeling.
Yeah, despite what I saw against Tennessee, Matt Barkley, and with that group of receivers, it's going to be a tough come-from-behind team. So we shall see on Sunday, Lions-Bears. Justin Rogers covers the Bears. Excuse me, covers the Lions. You're lucky you don't cover the Bears this year. Covers the Lions for the Detroit News. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Rogers. Friend of the program now, Justin, thanks again for all your insight.
I will wear my T-shirt proudly everywhere.
Big thank you again to Justin Rogers for that interview. We'll look forward to Bears-Lions on Sunday. And we want to talk to you about our sponsor. You know who it is. It is Loot Crate. Go to lootcrate.com/Shaw. Use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W. You're going to get $3 off your first crate. And what is in the month of December's month of crates? Well, we're talking about a time for a revolution. Fight the power. Pave the way for a brighter tomorrow. We got exclusive items from Loot Crate this month from Assassin's Creed, Mr. Robot, Firefly, and more. You get the monthly t-shirt and pin in December's crate. And if you subscribe now, you can get $3 off that first crate. You're going to want to belong to Loot Crate because we're talking Harry Potter, Marvel Comics, Fallout 4, Star Wars, so much more. The new Star Wars movie coming out later this month. Maybe we'll see some Star Wars Rogue One coming up in January's crate. But you get all this stuff for less than $20 a month. And again, $3 off your first crate when you use our promo code Shaw, S-H-A-W, at lootcrate.com/Shaw. John Solly, you are one of our fantasy experts, along, of course, with Arthur Arkish and J.C. Talon. I want to talk a little fantasy football when breaking down Bears-Lions as we start to wrap up the show, because this is either the first round of your playoffs, or if you're in only the top four, make the playoffs, your last week of the regular season. So it's a big fantasy football week. And if you look at the Bears and you look at the opponent, the Lions' numbers on defense are not good, as I talked about with Justin on that interview. But they shut down one of the best offenses in the league in the New Orleans Saints. So if you are in a pinch and you have Jordan Howard and you're looking and you're a two quarterback league and you're looking at Matt Barkley and a Lions pass defense that has bad numbers this year, if you're looking at maybe a Marquise Wilson or a Cam Meredith, you wrote about this week about the Lions defensive numbers. How are you analyzing which Bears to use this week?
So outside of Jordan Howard, I'm really not in love with a lot of the Bears options this week. And it's not so much because of who the Bears are and where they're at in their season as it is the opponent. You look at what Detroit's done. We had mentioned just before the interview that the Lions came into Soldier Field in week 4, looked terrible. And really since then, they have dramatically changed their offense. It's not just throw it up and try and make splash plays. They're playing keep away. You look at last week against the Saints ran off, I believe, 13 fewer offensive plays than their season average. The week before against Minnesota, Minnesota ran 11 fewer plays than their season average. The week before that, Jacksonville ran, I believe, 4 or 5 fewer plays. So when you're looking for fantasy options, you want teams that are going to get off a lot of offensive plays. More opportunity, more volume, better chance of getting in the end zone and racking up yards. So you look at the Bears, you know, they're not going to get – if this game goes to plan, and I think it probably will – the Bears are not going to get off as many offensive plays as they're used to. So that makes me less interested in so many of the Bears, really outside of Jordan Howard, who I think has the talent to overcome that that lack of volume. But if you're really desperate, you know, maybe a Cam Meredith or a Marquise Wilson. But in the on the Chicago side of things, I don't really like a lot of options at this point. And the on the offensive side for Detroit, again, the Lions are doing a lot of short passes. So, you know, a guy like Marvin Jones has really been negated. And in addition to that, Marvin Jones is pretty much hurt and playing hurt if he's out there. So maybe a guy like Eric Ebron or Anquan Boldin, if Bolden's available on your waiver wire, I kind of like him. Theo Riddick, if you're in a PPR league, I like Theo Riddick a lot. But this is not a game that I'm overly excited about in terms of fantasy goodness. You know, Lions defense, I think, is a good one. The Bears have, I believe, one of the lowest implied totals of the week. So if you're looking for a defense and it's out there, the Lions are actually turning into a decent fantasy defense. And now they get Matt Barkley on the road.
Yeah, I've actually seen the Detroit defense as one of the ones for people to pick up in their fantasy leagues. And it's when you talk about, I know you're talking in fantasy terms, John, but just the sense of Jordan Howard's really the only one I like on offense can just be a general statement for the way people are viewing the Bears. Maybe in addition to maybe Cody White here, who's playing well, but people are not going to focus on the center. Before we get to our picks and closing up shop here on the Chicago Football Podcast, two kind of not as exciting notes. I want to send out our thoughts to Rashan Salaam's family, former Bears first-round pick, Heisman Trophy winner. Was found dead in Boulder on Tuesday. I highly recommend you go into our website, profootballweekly.com/bears, and read the column that Hub wrote. You know, Hub was on the radio broadcast team when Rashan Salaam was here. A couple years ago, Arthur actually talked to Rashan Salaam in a Where Are They Now piece that you could also find on our Twitter at @bears_insider. And things seem to be going well for Rashan Salaam. So just really sad news for the Bears family. Also, a quick shout-out to our friend of the program, Adam Hoag, Adam's son James, undergoing heart surgery today, Wednesday. And to go check out Adam's Twitter or Facebook, Adam Hoag, H-O-G-E, to learn more about what his son's going through. James, you're probably not listening yet. Hopefully you'll subscribe one day. But all our thoughts and positive vibes with you in the next few days. So wanted to give out those shout-outs. All right, guys, let's close up shop. Bears-Lions on Sunday at Ford Field. I will be there. Be sure to add Bears_insider on Snapchat, because if the Lions score a touchdown, there's a really kind of interesting song that a guy sings from the field, and I laugh like every time it happens. Maybe I'll try to get it on Snapchat. It's just kind of – it's not like – it's just so different from Bear Down that you hear at Soldier Field. So I'll try to get that on Snapchat. So go ahead and add that. Get you sights and sounds from Ford Field. I think Bears right now are 8-point underdogs, guys, which is, as Justin mentioned on the pod, on the interview, he couldn't remember the last time that the Lions were favored by that much, although I think they had a pretty big spread 2 years ago against the Bears. So yeah, 8-point favorites. Remember, the Lions have played a lot of close games. So Dan Mott, I will go to you first. Bears-Lions on Sunday. Who you got?
I'm going to go Lions. I'm going to say Lions, let's say 28, Bears 21.
All right, so you got the Bears covering there, a little backdoor cover. You can see Matt Barkley hitting Marquise Wilson down the sideline as time expires to give Dan Mott the backdoor cover there. John Solly, what about you?
I'm actually going to go with a push, which is it's a rare thing, but I like the low scoring end of this. I think it's going to be Detroit 24, Bears 16.
All right. So I went back and forth on this, and I think listening to Justin, he kind of pushed me to give this one to the Lions because just look, you know, credit to Vic Fangio. This defense is playing well. They have the type of weapons to befuddle the Lions. If you rush the passer, which the Bears have pass rushers, if you run the ball, they have Jordan Howard. But the Lions at home, this game means a lot more to them. And just Matthew Stafford's playing so well, he's not going to let Fangio's defense rattle him again. I got Lions covering. I think it's the Detroit 32, Bears 20. That'll do it for this week's edition of PFW Chicago Football Podcast. Go ahead and subscribe on iTunes, the Pro Football Weekly Chicago. Give us a 5-star rating and review while you're at it. Add us on Snapchat, Bears_Insider. Follow us on Twitter, same handle for all of your Bear stuff, which is at profootballweekly.com/Bears. For my producers, Dan Mott and John Solly, I'm Kevin Fishbane. I'll be there in Ford Field on Sunday. Follow along for updates, and we got more Bears talk for you next week.